Tag und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode von Oh Schuhen, diesem einen Sneaker- und Streetwear-Podcast im Internet. Mein Name ist Amadeus Thüner und in dieser Episode haben wir euch erneut eine Brand aus den Niederlanden mitgebracht. Hatten wir uns für unsere letzte Episode unter anderem mit Tim von Putter zum Release ihres Nike Air Max One The Wave Packs getroffen und waren live beim Release vor Ort dabei, so befinden wir uns heute nur unweit von Putter entfernt am Damm. Dort um die Ecke, fußläufig so ungefähr 10 Minuten vom Hauptbahnhof entfernt, befindet sich der Amsterdamer Flagship Store von Filling Pieces und mit ihm auch das Headquarter der Brand. Im Erdgeschoss der imposante wie cleane Store, oben drüber das bunte Treiben vieler Menschen an vielen Tischen, umringt von einer Glasfassade mit bestem Blick auf das geschäftige Treiben der Stadt und unzähligen Designskizzen, Fabrics und ähnlich kreativem Stuff. Man merkt direkt, this is where the magic happens. Dirigent dieser Zaubershow ist Guillaume Philibert. 2009 gründete er Filling Pieces im Gedanken, eine Brücke zwischen Streetwear und High-End-Luxury schlagen zu wollen. Gab es damals derartiges einfach noch nicht. Noch war kein Virgil Abloh bei Louis Vuitton, kein Kim Jones bei Dior und keine Yun An bei Nike. Dass ein Ye, formerly known as Kanye West, Luxusbrands aus meist französischem Hause mit den Streetwear-Staples aus New York oder den Sportswear-Brands mit Swoosh oder den drei Streifen kombinierte, das war ein Novum. Und dass bei der Pariser Fashion Show auch Rapper rumhingen, das war ebenso neu. But Hip-Hop taught us und damit war alsbald und nicht nur der Straße klar, dass es einen Paradigmenwechsel in der Modeindustrie geben würde. Streetwear meets High Fashion. Oder wie Heiß Nobiety so treffend titelte, The New Luxury. Genau zu Beginn dieser Zeit begann Filling Pieces diesen kreativen Querschnitt in ihren Designs aufzubauen und fertigte mit dem Low Top einen Sneaker, der gleichzeitig den Anspruch eines Luxusproduktes verfolgte, ohne dann aber direkt 2000 plus Euro zu kosten. Der Schuh verkaufte sich wie geschnitten Brot, avancierte zum Must-Have und alsbald war Filling Pieces mit Jahresumsätzen im zweistelligen Millionenbereich das Aushängeschild, wenn es um das Thema Casual Sneaker ging. Vorerst aber nur ein Trend, musste und wollte sich Filling Pieces abseits des Casual Sneaker Movements weiterentwickeln und setzte daher auf den Ausbau ihrer Produktrange. Kein leichtes Unterfangen, aber eines, welches sie meisterten. Fast forward September 2022 und The New Luxury ist der Status Quo. LV Supreme, Dior Nike und Prada Adidas ist vom Hype und Oha-Moment zur Normalität geworden. Für Guillaume und Filling Pieces ist damit ein Teil ihrer ursprünglichen Mission, doch noch lange nicht das Ziel erreicht. Wie sagt man so schön? There's always more in it. Aus diesem Grund sprechen wir heute und in diesem Advertorial und in freundlicher Zusammenarbeit mit Filling Pieces mit dem Mann hinter Filling Pieces, Gründer und CEO Guillaume Philibert, der übrigens auch jüngst in die Jury von Hollands Next Topmodel berufen wurde. Dazu aber später mehr. Erst einmal, Guillaume, welcome to the show.
Thank you, welcome. How are you? Welcome to the office.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me in this wonderful office, in this office space in Amsterdam. Amsterdam is such a beautiful city. I'm always coming back here and I'm happy about that. But let's start with this interview about your brand, about Filling Pieces. And the first thing which comes to my mind when I'm thinking about Filling Pieces is how you try to build a bridge. So tell me, what does a solid bridge really needs?
That's a good question. I think a solid bridge needs a foundation where people find virtual and equal ground to meet each other. And that sounds maybe a little bit difficult, but just to explain you that how we started over 10 years ago was that the footwear market was different. There was a lot of sneaker brands, more athletic focused, and then there was a lot of high-end brands doing sneakers like Gucci, Dior, Vuitton, etc. So I felt there was such a big difference between these two worlds, and that's why we created the Low Top, the first Filling Pieces shoe, to really build that bridge between these two segments. Streetwear coming from black culture, high-end fashion was for the white elites. It's two different people, different worlds, and we wanted to bridge that gap and create fertile ground between these two different segments. Eventually, the brand grew out to be way more than just a brand that was jumping in this niche that was there for grabs, because we saw this coming, right? I don't think it's that we created this niche. I think that it was there and not a lot of brands were tapping into it. But I really, at the age of 19, 20, saw these artists like Kanye West, Pharrell Williams, wearing Dior denims with Jordans, right? I saw them wearing Margiela jackets with sneakers. And I felt that these two worlds, they were mixing so well together. And I figured out a way how to create a product for, you know, that niche. And I think that that's how we started.
You said this was a niche, but you already saw that it combines in a good way. What exactly, what was the kickstarting point where you thought, okay, this leather jacket or high-end luxury fashion, what you ever wanted to name it, designer piece looks good with a rocking down sneakers, you know what I mean? So has there been this specific video or this specific photograph or whatever you thought for yourself, oh, this might be something which is not just like a trend or something which Pharrell or Kanye look good in it? Something which could be bigger than this?
I think there was two moments when obviously it's a buildup of all these different artists or runway shows or things I've seen traveling or in stores. But there was two specific moments that I think are important to highlight, which was the video of T-Pain and Kanye West called Good Life. And he was wearing a Margiela jacket there. It was like this patchwork letter with nylon piece. And you know, that was a piece that I felt like it's so streetwear, but then it's a high-end piece, right? With a high-end price tag. And I felt that, you know, the way it was styled by Kanye is that I felt there was more. And then I remember traveling to New York for the first time when I was 16 or 17, a little bit before I started. And I went to Barney's, which is like this super high-end, it used to be a super high-end department store that unfortunately doesn't exist anymore or in a different way, but I remember seeing Billionaire Boys Club there, and you know, I felt the garments, they felt very qualitative. It was still run by Nigo and Pharrell back then. And I just felt that this premium feel, but then again, it was a very streetwear kind of brand. And then the price point was between high-end and streetwear, right? Instead of paying 60, 70 euros for a sweater or a t-shirt, it was like 140, 130, something like that. And I felt that price point was interesting. And then seeing the people buying it and combining it with, you know, luxury brands, that was for me a breakthrough moment where I felt that this market or share is going to be big. And that's how we started.
Thinking of building and founding a brand seems, on the one hand, very easy. Because, yeah, let's do this. I want to see this coming to real life. I have this vision. Let's do this. And on the other hand, it sounds tough as whatever, you know? Because how do you start? What is exactly what you need? How do you fulfill everything you have in your mind? How do you get the vision on the table, or in the end, on the bodies of different kind of people? So let's get us a little bit back in time. In 2009, you founded Filling Pieces. The initial idea you already talked about, but how did everything evolve from then?
I mean, that's a lot of, I think it's so many things to, it's quite hard to grasp and to speak out in this podcast, but I think I can give a few like main points of how everything started and what it takes. So it's a little bit hard to grasp to do everything in such a short podcast, but I think I can give a few pointers of how you know, how we started and how, you know, what it takes. And exactly like you say, like starting a brand, and please keep in mind, you know, 10 plus years ago when I started, it was also a very different era, right? It's like the come up of Instagram. Twitter was really hot back then. It was different eras. It was the come up of Complex, High Snobiety, Hypebeast. Like all these blogs were relatively, I won't say small, but way smaller than they are now. And like you say, it's easier to just have this sketchbook and start drawing shoes, or go to a print shop and buy blanks and print a t-shirt. And, you know, nowadays when you have a product and you have some photos, you have an Instagram page and a website, all of a sudden you have a brand already, right? But for me, it's more than that. It takes a lot of guts to actually, you know, approach retailers or, you know, people to wear it. And you know, it's hard to define, like, when are you a brand, or when do you just have a product that's nice, or when is it just merchandise? But I believe that nowadays it's easier for kids that hopefully are listening to this podcast feel like, hey, I can do this because he can do it, right? I think that's the kind of premise of why we're doing things. And to get back, I think that how we started is that we had this shoe that was more premium than any athletic footwear out there. It was handcrafted. It had this formal look. You can dress it up, you know, with a nice trousers or just with denim or a tracksuit. And then it's more, I would say, streetwear. So we're in this sweet spot of how you could dress with the shoe or style the shoe. But then again, also, we're bridging a gap. So we could go to these sneaker retailers and say, like, hey, we want to be positioned in the right stores with the right accounts. But also at these department stores or higher-end boutiques, we would be the entry price point product and sit next to these high-end brands. So it was a sweet spot for us. But then again, it sounds easier than it is because you have to save up money. You need to find the right production facilities and developers to help you building a product. Then you have a sample, then you need to produce it. Then from producing, you need to ship it to stores or even approach stores. And I think that timing is very important. I think we started the brand at the right time for the right product, for the right price. It was just during our post economical crisis. So people wanted to spend less, but on better products. And they didn't have the money to pay 600-700 euros for a pair of luxury trainers. And I think that this is where we entered the market at the right time. And then again, you know, we didn't have any marketing budget, no advertising budget. It was just me with a few friends helping me out. And what really helped me is to, you know, get in contact and become friends with like-minded individuals that had the same passion. And as you know, the fashion industry could be very, you know, exclusive and not really acceptive. You had these gatekeepers that were like the editors, the buyers, the it kids that would say like, hey, your brand is cool or not. And if your brand is not cool, it's hard to enter that world. And what we kind of did is just to, you know, get connected with the right people. We were close to Black Rainbow in Pigalle in Paris. We were close to the guys from Daily Paper in the Netherlands and Pata. So that's how we kind of like created our own table and build our own successes. And this really helped me in the beginning to get the word out. Then again, you know, blogs like Heist Abiding and Hypebeast really wanted to post about the brand because they wanted to support a young business in this industry. So we had the help of a lot of people. And I think it's easier now to create a brand and go viral. There's a lot of ways on social media to have the right product that has the right zeitgeist and just, you know, hit the nail and you know, had the ground running, and then all of a sudden your picture goes viral on Instagram and you start a brand. And I think this is the biggest difference between starting a brand 10 years ago when I started or nowadays, that it's not about the gatekeepers anymore. It's about having a good product with a good value and relevancy. And then, you know, if you build your community that actually supports and buys the brands or follow the brands on social media or pushes the brands, that's way more valuable nowadays than back in the days. Before, you needed to be in these cool retailers to be relevant. Now it's just, if you have the crowd, if you have the fans, then you go viral and it's more moving towards direct to consumer, which is a very interesting space. So a lot of things changed, but I do think that it's all about having the right product, the right concept, the right relevancy, and then, you know, the right timing. I think those four things are very important to become successful in fashion.
You are in this industry for 13 years now, yeah, with having an own brand. How do you keep on keeping on?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's so tough. Like every day it's figuring out like where the market is going, where consumer behaving is going, where trends are going. And the difficulty is that, you know, within fashion, it's all about trends. And then again, we are a brand that have proven that we're here to stay. I mean, like you said, we're around for almost 13 years and we have a certain DNA, design DNA or recognizability that people like. There's certain core values about design or the brand that people like. And if you want to expand and grow to different markets, or it is, you know, it's hard to not please everyone and then again stay true to your values and your DNAs as a brand. So it's every day. My secret is, I think, is surround myself by young people because they know what's coming on, what's relevant, or what the future is. But then again, you know, I'm in a good spot where at the age of 32, I do know the classic sneakers and the classic trends and the classic things that have been going on. And then again, I also know, you know, because of the youth that's surrounding me, like what's coming. And I think that this is a sweet spot for me where I'm trying to move around. And then again, you know, We have this new, complete new category of clothing and accessories, but also loafers, dress shoes, right? Which is becoming a bigger category for us. And this is also something that I see, that there's so many releases, there's so many sneaker releases, and it's almost that everyone is just trying to hit the ground running and make a hit time after time. And I think that we are trying to like stay away from that a little bit and just focus on, you know, the core business of the trainers and sneakers that we are doing well, that people, you know us for and come back for, because we have so many customers that have been around for like 7+ years and buying the same shoe, but then again, they do expect innovation from us. So it's really like diving into details and innovating on the core silhouettes that we're doing, but then again, also looking for new opportunities to get more market shares and more consumers in that want to buy something else. And there's a lot of people that come in our stores and say like, hey, that low top or that core silhouette from you guys, I respect it, it's the foundation of the brand, but I'm looking for something a little bit more edgy. And we're also trying to build product that makes sense for this consumer, you know, to keep them part of the brand, because you cannot serve everyone with one type of product. So the loafers is growing for us. I do see a big trend in, you know, kids trying to move away a little bit from all the sneaker releases and try a little bit to dress a bit more formal. And this is where, you know, a lot of brands are staying true to who they are and fulfilling that void. Like my good friend Teddy Santis from Emily and Doré, like who I met a long time ago through our other mutual friend Ronnie Fike, and he showed me a logo and a few fonts and you know, a mood board. Like, hey, this is a brand I'm going to start. And it looked like very real. He's from Queens. It looks very Queens, but in a very chic way. And he stays true to his brand values and DNA forever. And it works for him. And that's why people want to buy into him. And there's one conversation I had with him that I learned a lot from. He's like, I don't want to do trends. I want to build product and an aesthetic that's going to be here for the next 30, 40, 50 years. And that's what he's doing. And that's what's working for him. So that's also what I learned from, like, for us to, and I'm not saying that we're perfect, that we never jumped on trends, but it's just something that I've tried to avoid, to build something that's everlasting.
That's a really good thing to say. We want to try to be everlasting. Filling this gap was something which was very important for you back then, and it is, of course, still important for you right now. But do you think that the bridge is already built between streetwear and, let's say, high-end luxury in 2022? Is this bridge completely done?
To be honest with you, I think that after we kind of started, and once again, I'm not taking credit for, you know, finding this niche or being, you know, one of the first brands really tapping into this, but you did see a lot of brands, you know, high-end brands and existing brands going down with their price point, making more jerseys, making more streetwear. And then you saw a lot of the athletic brands or streetwear focused brands pumping up their prices, right? I remember like Jordans now are like 240, 220 in euros. I remember them not even topping 200 or 180. So you see that this market is, the top and the bottom are coming closely together, right? In terms of price point. And this is a sign that obviously it's, I won't say saturated, but it's a very big market share at the moment. And there's brands like Off-White and Palm Angels, etc. They're really like doing this niche so well and became so big and really on a global scale, putting this niche on the map. And I do think the bridge is built between these two segments, obviously, because it's such a big market share and there's so many brands that are successful in it. But I do think that it's here to stay. Like, it's not that streetwear all of a sudden is dead or people don't want to buy it anymore. Like, it's mass market. It's like everywhere now. And I see, you know, grandpas wearing Yeezys, and I see younger kids also buying high-end pieces. So it's like, it's becoming so big, and I do believe it's here to stay, but there's still room for us to kind of design our own bridge and do things in our way and master that.
I really like the slogan, I guess, High Snobiety really created, like the new luxury.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it really puts together perfectly what's all about. Like, luxury can mean anything. For some people, it's time. For other, it's product. for someone else is something completely different. But in the end, it puts together what was back on what is living on the street, like streetwear, where it's coming from, the origin of it. But on the other side, well done garments, not just a t-shirt. Even if just a t-shirt can be something really special. Where do you get your inspiration from?
Good question. I think that to start with, the main inspirations is that, as Filling Pieces, we stand for, as we said, bridging the gap or bridge the gap in a more active way. Which means, creating fertile ground between different people, cultures, and disciplines. So we get a lot of inspiration from people, the first word. People's behavior, how they dress, what moves them, cultures, which speak about how people were raised, how people are, what they believe in, their values, their purpose, which is also traveling, like meeting new cultures I always love to travel and figure out how different parts of the world or what moves people in different parts of the world. And then disciplines, I studied architecture. And, we want to also build a bridge between, disciplines such as architecture, design disciplines, such as architecture, art in general, music. And this is also what really inspires me. I meet so many cool artists that make new music genres. Like, for example, Amapiano is a very big genre now, which is a mix between Kaito and house, which is from South Africa, kind of like Afro house. And it comes with a whole new way of dressing, dancing, beats, and that really inspires me to do what I do and keep building product or design directions that are part of this new zeitgeist. So yeah, just really like people in general, that really inspires me, instead of just looking like, oh, what's on the runways or what's trendy now. We really try to look at a deeper value of what moves people. And like you said, it's such a fast changing industry. There's so many things happening. I also get older, more mature. I'm a father now of a 1 year, 1.5 year old. So I spend my time differently. But then again, try to connect with different people from across the globe that keep you up to date about what's happening. And this is something that I believe in, to keep being inspired.
Are you someone who is really reading a lot, being concentrated, sitting on the couch, reading 1 hour or something specific? Or is you someone who is getting information from all of the world in 10 seconds, this, now, that, then we switch on to Instagram, then checking out Twitter, Facebook, back to TikTok, then reading this newspaper online, checking out television, whatsoever? So what kind of consumer of media and consumer of information are you?
Unfortunately, if I can say that there's one, there's one thing that I would love to work on is patience. I'm a very impatient person. That's also one of the reasons why I started this brand, because I was studying architecture. And as you may know, the whole building process of architecture or buildings is quite like a long process, and I felt that I was missing the speed, and that's why then during my studies I started Filling Pieces. So that being said, it's like I'm very impatient, and even though I like reading books, I don't do it often enough because I'm just too impatient to read. And so I'm definitely more of a person that is very active on social media, online, just to check what's happening, speak to a lot of people about what's happening in different parts, or keeping up to date with news. I'm definitely more of like that type of media consumer, but then again, I would love to read more books and etc. just to, educate myself better.
Do you have something like a daily meal?
A daily meal? Oh,
I mean regarding reading.
Oh. There's obviously, when I wake up, there's a few things I check, which is the news about what's happening. And even though that doesn't always relate immediately to what I'm doing, it keeps you up to date about where the world is moving, right? And the older I get, the more I understand certain consequences of political choices that are being made, or, global crisis that's going on with the environment. Like, all these things are also influencing me how I run my business, because besides designing product, I also have to run a business, right? So there's all these things that I keep up to date when it comes to the news. I'm a big Formula One fan, so I always read this few online magazines or, you know, places about what's happening on, what's happening in Formula One. Then obviously the hypebeast, high-end season, etc. I'm checking as well.
Sorry to interrupt, but who's your favorite Formula One racer of all time?
Ooh, that's a tough question.
Because I know that the Dutch, the Netherlands are very good right now.
So to be very honest with you, I think that it's undoubtedly that, and I know that a lot of people are maybe not agreeing with me, or that this could backlash perhaps being from the Netherlands, but I mean, in numbers and proven what he has done, I think Lewis Hamilton is undoubtedly, you know, the greatest of all times in this sport. That being said, I think Michael Schumacher, in terms of style, also in terms of championships and wins, you know, like he is up there in, you know, the best of all times as well. You know, being from the Netherlands, I do think that, you know, unfortunately, it's still something that people hate upon, but, you know, Lewis Hamilton is, you know, not only as a driver, because you can talk about two things. You can talk about how a person drives and his championships and wins and results. But the other side as well, like, he is such a great person for this planet, an individual, what he stands for, how he speaks up, opens up about certain issues, and really has the same values as Filling Pieces, which is really try to create positive change, right? That's how I feel about, you know, who masters the sport. But then again, you also have this new generation of, you know, obviously, undoubtedly Max Verstappen, who's a great driver. He is undoubtedly extremely well in the sport. He wants to win, and he's proving that he is, you know, great, and he will also be one of the, you know, top racers, but time will tell if he will get 7 championships or 8 or whatever. So we'll, but politically right, I think they're both great drivers, but also like George Russell, Lando Norris, all these young kids that have so much potential, Charles Leclerc, to become great, but time will tell, you know.
Yeah, true. Time will tell. When you're a fan of Formula One, do you love racing or even driving cars for yourself as well?
I love both. I love automotive and I love the sport in general, but I just like, you know, four wheels that go fast and everything that goes around that. I just love it.
So the German word is Fuhrpark. I'm not quite sure what's the Dutch word for a huge garage is. Oh, yeah. But are there many cars in your garage? Is there one specific car in your garage? Something you really like, or maybe something you are having an eye on, maybe buying one day?
I have 2 cars. I don't have a crazy car garage, but there's one family car which is higher. It's a British car. Which I really like. It's very comfortable, and it's funny that, and once again, I don't want to sound like this arrogant guy that brags about cars, because I love cars, but, you know, it's a dream that I had to one day have a Range Rover for the family and a 911 for myself. By hardworking and staying true to who we are, I was able to buy one. So I have a Porsche GT3, which is a beautiful car. And I really enjoy driving it, because you're able to drive it every day. But then again, also it has all these sport features, and you can take it on the track and do some crazy laps. Yeah. And German cars are definitely the best in the world. Yeah.
Of course. That's a fact. That's a matter of fact. I'm asking because of 2 things. One thing, of course, is because of the Netherlands. I think every time I'm traveling to the Netherlands, and especially to Amsterdam, I'm doing this by car. It's the easiest and most comfortable way for me. And every time I see as many cars on the street as bikes, which is kind of crazy, because the environment and the city planning and so on are really taking care about getting cars out of the city, which I do think it's a good thing. But on the other hand, there's so many people traveling by car, driving with a car from Amsterdam to Rotterdam, which is just a half an hour drive or something like that. And I asking it because on the second kind of thing, there are so many new collaborations between fashion brands and automotive brands. As you have seen, Fragment in Hiroshi Fujiwara doing something with Maserati. Then you have, of course, Virgil Abloh doing it with Maybach and Mercedes-Benz. And the list is getting longer and longer. I guess there one day will be coming out, like you said, Teddy Sanders, Emilio Andor, and Porsche, and so on. Is this something which defines the, I don't want to say elderly, but more mature or getting a little bit older, maybe having a little bit more money kind of streetwear scene?
I think it's, first of all, why it's happening. I think because there's such a, you know, equal ground of how cars are designed and the culture around cars and then how streetwear works, right? It's, I mean, that's how we look at it. We did an automotive program with a company called Diverse. They restore cars. They normally do only Porsches, etc., but or they specialize in Porsche. But we did a Fiat Panda, which is a very cultural icon for a lot of people in Europe, at least. And it was the car that you were able to buy or, you know, was gifted secondhand when you were 18 and getting your driving license. So there's a big culture around this Fiat Panda that we wanted to tap into. So that's why we really went in and bought two of the old ones from the 90s, early 90s, and completely stripped them down to the base and repainted everything and redid the interior and reworked on the engine, etc., to restore the engine. And, you know, it was great to work on an iconic design because that's what at Filling Pieces we are focusing on, to make iconic designs that are everlasting, right? The 911, even though it keeps updating and getting more better and faster and cleaner, etc., it's still the same shapes. And that's something that I, as a designer, really embrace and like. So I do think from a design perspective, there's a lot of similarities about streetwear and car design and automotive. And then again, the cultures around it, people really, you know, embracing or idolizing a certain car design. That's how we in streetwear idolize a certain shoe design or a designer or a brand. So there's a lot of similarities, and that's why I think there's so many now automotive and fashion collaborations. And like you said, it's, I think we all, when we were young, had this poster of this car above our bed, and that's what we were inspired by and motivated by to one day buy that car. And I think that what I like about most of these fashion collaborations with automotive is that they create this beautiful pinnacle piece that you would have a poster above your bed, but you're able to buy a piece of merchandise from it, which is normally very good quality, right? So I know Emmeline Doré did a full collection, and then they had the driver gloves, right? That's something that you could buy and still feel part of this industry. For us, it was the cap and the t-shirt and a pair of shoes that and a jacket that we designed, so you could buy one of these merchandise pieces. And I also like the storytelling behind it, because in streetwear, it's a lot about storytelling. It's a lot about genuine storytelling about a certain design or this pair of Jordans that we're buying again because it's nostalgic for us, because Michael Jordan used to play a game in it, right? So it's all about nostalgia. And I think that that's the same what the car industry is. And I personally really like the Kit BMW, a project from Ronnie Fike, and the whole video with all these same cars tuned, etc. Like that's the environment that we're buying into. And so I really like where this space is going.
One thing I really liked about this Kith BMW cooperation was that in the end, he worked on an older version and on the completely opposite of it, and a newer version, and then gifted this newer version to his parents, which I thought was such a wonderful thing and such humble in... No, I wouldn't say in a bragging way, because it's still humble, but you know what I mean? Like, okay, here to my parents, this wonderful new, completely up-to-date designed car, but it's by myself and by my brand. And I really, really like that. And I'm very curious about what's going down with all these automotive meets, streetwear meets, luxury kind of thing, because as you said, it's all about like nostalgia and the emotions behind that. Because, like you said, and I can't emphasize this enough. When I talk to different kind of people, every time they're coming up with, it's about storytelling, and it's something which is so important, because it's not just about the product. Of course, a good shoe has to fit your feet and has to be in a good quality, and you have to wear it, and it should look good. But on the other hand, it's about the emotion it brings with you. You don't wear a Jordan 1 because it's the most comfortable shoe in the world. You wear it because Michael Jordan wore it, and because it's the story behind it, and nostalgia, and so on and so on. So this is very important. It's great to hear it from you. And you already talked about how important people in the community is for you. Right now we are sitting in your office above of the retail space in central Amsterdam. Very busy and crowded things going on outside. You already showed me around the office, and I see there's a DJ booth built up. So having these people around the office, not just for work, of course, it's about the community and the culture, but tell me in your words, how important is it for you to have this location and this kind of office, because it's very wide and open space?
Yeah, very well said. I think that the location for us, and also in the future, anywhere we would, you know, put feet on ground and put our Flying Pieces flag in the ground, I think that location is so important when it comes to giving back. Right, it's a lot of the brands from back in the days are just selling, and even though there's storytelling or there's heritage, it's a transaction, and we want to stay away from that. I believe that people that are dedicated and loyal and fans of the brand and part of the community, they want to feel that they're part of something. And I think that the location that we, you know, in the middle of the city, is that even though people might not live in the city, at least they have a place to go to in the city. And that's how we also designed the space and the store, that, you know, we can move everything aside and do a party there. And we do, like, once every 2 months, we do a big event. And it's also open to anyone just to come and to be part of this. And I believe that that's so important to build a community, because those are the people that, you know, push your brand forward in good or bad times. And, you know, music is obviously a great tool and platform to, you know, to find equal grounds, because we all love this certain artist or that beat, and it's a way for people to feel free and feel welcome, and not having the feeling of, oh, I have to buy something in the store just to go in or just to be part of the place. And, you know, even though I believe that I don't really see it as a store, I see it more as a cultural hub in the city, where we do workshops and panels and also give back in terms of experience and etc. I do believe that, you know, there's people that buy the brand and like Flying Pieces for the shoes and the products, and that's great. I mean, that's what we need. And there's people that want to know a little bit more about the brand, or really become part of our community and go to our events and really support what we're doing. And, you know, I love both different consumers, and I think you both need them to build and scale a brand and become more known and respected. Yeah.
Have you been to many skate shops back in the day?
Yeah, even though I not really say I'm a professional skater, because I really sucked at it, I really liked going there, because it was not, and I think that, you know, it also fueled me kind of to do what I do today, because a skate shop was actually one of the few kind of retail experiences that was just more than a store, right? If you think about it, that, you know, you could go there, and this is again referring to, you know, our also mentors, kind of, you know, G and Edson of Pata, they had a different concept. You know, they were selling, you know, vinyls. I think they also sold graffiti, I'm not sure, the cans, and you could buy the latest sneakers from, you know, the States that you could not buy anywhere else in the Netherlands, right? So, and it was also a spot where people just came to connect, and same for skate shops. I think that this is one of the few concepts then that, yeah, you could buy skate stuff there, like a Dex and all the accessories that come with it. But it was also a place where you could talk about, you know, what are the new innovations when it comes to skateboarding, what are the new moves, people were skateboarding in front of the door. And that's, I think, that also fueled me how I would think about future retail. It was more of a community spot than it was just a place where you could, you know, buy a skateboard. So it's a very important one, yeah.
How important is Amsterdam for yourself and for the brand?
Very important. A lot of people ask me the question, like, would you have done the same if you would grew up in New York or anywhere else? I think that probably not, because the brand and who I am is so based on the Netherlands. And for a lot of people that haven't really explored Amsterdam like you have done, would say like, oh, it's this, you know, cool city in the Netherlands, in Europe, and you know, you can buy weed, and there's like the red light district, and there's all these canals and people on bikes. But there's so much more about Amsterdam and the Netherlands in general. Like, obviously, you know that the Dutch people have a colonial history of, you know, going to different places and kind of like, yeah, it's hard to say, but really tearing up certain countries and owning them, right? And slavery is a very dark page in the history books of the Netherlands, but I have to say that it happened and we cannot deny it, right? So, but then again, it also helped being the Netherlands in the future after to become a very multicultural country with so many different ethnicities, which, you know, all these different people brought different cultures, and you know, it's now very embraced and people can be who they are, and that's also fueling who I am and how it's a melting pot of different cultures. And that's what you see when you walk into our store or into our office, is that it's all these different faces from all different parts, you know, of the city or different parts of the country, or different backgrounds, different beliefs, sexual preferences, different religions. And this is what really makes us who we are, and that's why we're able to do what we do, and from a company point of view and brand point of view. But then again, also, you know, me going with the first samples to New York and Paris and London, to the big cities, to kind of find new retailers, it also was cool that you're from Amsterdam, because it was this, you know, kind of rebellious place in Europe, and you know, obviously, you know, always the reformation to the Pata, you know, like, it was cool, you know. And I think that that also opened a lot of doors for filling pieces to be accepted, etc. So it really helped me doing what I do and how I started.
When talking about fashion out of the Netherlands, you always talk about filling pieces, you're talking about Pata, and you're talking about Daily Paper. In my opinion, these are the three big brands. But of course, there are so many things going on. Are there some brands you would like to name drop right now that we can check them out, that we now know that this will be the next big shit?
Yeah, I mean, to get back, and I don't always want to talk about the influence, but you know, Filling Pieces started with me and a group of people that were like-minded, that were helping out, you know, packing shoes and bringing them to stores, etc., shipping boxes. And there's a lot of, there was a few kids actually that helped me in the beginning, and that did internships, and at then one point they got a job at the company. One did marketing, one did design. And actually two of the designs, and what's funny, that not funny, but what I think is important to say, is that we love Filling Pieces to be a platform for creatives and new talent to kind of learn here and then start for themselves, right? So we have this this beautiful brand, it's called The New Originals, TNO. Their slogan is "Creatives are the new athletes." It's founded by very creative and young and ambitious kids that, you know, learned a lot here and then started our own brand, and we really like empower that. So The New Originals is a very cool brand. One of our footwear designers, his name is Michael Lenhayden. He's from Copenhagen, extremely talented kid. He graduated design school in Copenhagen, and then he applied for a job here. He got the job and he became a very important factor for the brand. And he also has a new brand, which is really on outdoor and innovation, called Peril, which I really like. And then there's other friends that are more embracing vintage design, etc. And they're doing a lot of repurposing of vintage garments, which is called Reservé. And those, I think, three brands are very, I would say, on the come up of to become quite big.
It's always good to have some shout out on the podcast.
Yeah. It's respect also, you know, credits where credits are due. Yeah.
That's true. The last time we both see each other was at your friends and family dinner event in Berlin. You have to leave a little bit earlier than planned because you have to sit in a famous TV show. Is this a normal day for you in your life, being on the television? Are you a VIP? Am I sitting in a room with a very important person for the Netherlands? Tell me.
Yeah, I mean, the dinner was a lot of fun. Thank you for coming. Yeah, it was great. It was a great pizza spot. And I love Berlin. But yeah, it was definitely not a normal day in my life. And I'm definitely not a TV star or VIP. No, but I was asked for this series. And I think that, the TV industry is quite interesting because, you know, it's also part of culture, and you reach such a big audience by doing that. And I would never do something on TV unless it is really representing who I am and the brand. But there's this Dutch TV series, I think you also have it in Germany, which is called Next Top Model. In this case, it's Holland's Next Top Model. And before, it used to be very glam and all about, you know, the perfect body shape and the length. And they really changed this season to being more inclusive and having a very beautiful different cast. And also the jury was really interesting that I was there with the judges, sorry. This is one photographer from the Netherlands, special photographer, Philip Vogelsang, the mother of Bella, Gigi and Anwar, Yolanda Hadid, who's actually Dutch. And then Loisa Lamers, who is a transgender model that won a few years ago. So it was a beautiful jury and part of the judges. And it was, yeah, something new, but I think really representing who we are as a brand. So I went ahead, but don't expect me to do a lot of other TV things. It was just I really believed in this show.
But are there other shows you would like to be part of?
Well, we shot a documentary 2 years ago, and it launched last year. It's called Bridging the Gap. It's a documentary, it's 50 minutes long, about how we started and the ups and downs, mostly the downs, about embracing the downs and really trying to educate and show people the raw and honest, I would say, journey of starting a brand. So hopefully people that are listening to this podcast that want to know more, they can see the documentary. It's on YouTube, free to watch for everyone. And I feel that, you know, especially, you know, with the younger generation, there's a lot of mental health issues about being perfect and fitting in, right? And we wanted to give the kind of opposite voice of, no, it's okay to be yourself. It's okay to make mistakes and to be open about it. And to give just an honest, I would say, approach about what it takes to build a brand, because everything on Instagram is filtered and polished. So, but yeah, I really liked in doing that. So if there's other documentaries about fashion or streetwear, I would love to be part of that. But yeah, that's about it. You won't see me in the next Top Gun movie or whatever. No, I don't have the skills for that.
One day, maybe. Who knows? Last but not least, of course, we have to talk about what's coming up with Film Pieces for the last half of the year of 2022. And of course, we taking a look in 23. What can you tell us about the upcoming styles, the upcoming collection? Are there some specifics you would like to point out?
I think that I think the first time for me publicly to speak about all the stuff that we have coming out for this year, so I do think that it's interesting. We have a very beautiful collaboration coming up with a brand from Switzerland, which is very known in the watch industry, called IWC, International Watch Company, from Schaffhausen. I was asked to become an ambassador over a year ago, a little bit longer, and that collaboration went really well, or at least the ambassadorship and the relationship, and then they approached us for a project to work on a shoe and a full campaign around the woodland colored Top Gun watch, which is part of their monochromatic series. And that's coming out, and I'm super excited about that. That's gonna launch in September. We have a very cool collaboration coming up with our long-term friends from Daily Paper, which is very cool. It's based on Brazzaville, which is a place where it's all about being a sapeur lifestyle. I don't know if you exactly know what it is, but there's these beautiful gentlemen in suits and very flamboyant dressed. We have plans to open a store in London next year, so that's also very exciting. And other than that, Germany is a very potential market for us, so we really try to, you know, become more known there and to look for opportunities there to grow. So expect a lot of activities and events. So whoever's listening that wants to be part of these events, keep up to date on the social media platforms and our pages to see what's up. But yeah, Germany, I love the country in general. I love the culture, and there's so many, you know, even though the country's quite scattered when it comes to what's happening where, in Hamburg, Stuttgart, Munich, Berlin, etc., I do think there's a cohesiveness of culture. And the people are just nice there. I don't know what it is. Like, I traveled to so many places, and in Germany, even though it's very similar to Dutch culture, where people are, you know, everyone is very humble and a little bit more distant, but as soon as you get to know people, they're very open and welcoming, which I really like. So you would definitely see more of the brand in Germany.
That's great to hear, especially that you say that you think that Germany is as nice as the Netherlands is. So thank you for this compliment. Really take it. Thank you. But jokes aside, when you could only pick one specific, not like garment, because you have to dress fully to, you know, don't run around naked, but if you could pick one specific thing which is very important for your own personal taste, your own personal style, even if this may be a watch, a chain, maybe what your wallet or whatsoever, but what is the one thing you can't leave the house without? And don't tell me it's the ring for you know because because the wedding ring is something which is definitely on the list, of course you can't take that off, but what would it be?
I think it's two items, and obviously an iPhone, but I'm not gonna mention that. It's this ring that I have, which is not my wedding band, but it's called a Mottenklopper, which is basically, I don't know the German word, but it used to be this tool where you clean your you know, when you enter a house, you have a welcoming mat, and to clean that with. And in Surinamese, the country where I'm from, Suriname in South America, this is kind of a cultural ring that a lot of the Surinamese people wear, and it basically is for good luck and to kind of wipe away the dirt from the past and just focus on a bright future. So this really keeps me grounded and also remembering where I'm coming from, my roots, but also it's a beautiful accessory, I think, that really tells who I am and where I come from. And then I would say a pair of our loafers, because it's just so easy to dress it up and dress it down. They're very comfortable, they're chic in a certain way. Those two items really, I would say, translate who I am and what I cannot leave the house without. Yeah.
These are very great picks, and I do know what you mean. It's this crazy bat you use to clean the mattress, as you said. And I definitely have my grandma on my mind, who doing this kind of stuff. And I will visit her in a few days, and maybe I ask her about that, because 100%. you know, grandmas are always telling the greatest stories.
I know, and they're very old school, so they're keep there. But like, you know, my aunties and whatever. I don't have my grandmas anymore, but they still had them at home, even though it's 2021 or 22 now. They still had them, so they still believe in the old school ways. Yeah,
sometimes the old school things are the best. 100%. Marini, thanks for taking your time being on this podcast. It was great to have this talk with you. I will say it won't be the last time we are talking about whatever you're gonna do with Filling Pieces. We are very looking forward to that, to whatever happening in 22 and the collabs you already mentioned and what's going down in 23. It won't be my last time in Amsterdam, so hopefully you will invite me again to your wonderful office. Thanks, that's what I wanted to have. I invite myself and you say yes, and we have it on record. So everything's fine. Gio, many thanks.
Thank you guys.
Und damit vielen Dank, dass ihr bei der 114. Episode mit dabei wart. Ihr könnt alle Episoden wie gewohnt kostenlos auf Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Deezer, Amazon Music, Audible, Google Podcasts, Podtail, Podigy und bei allen anderen Streamingdiensten hören. Und wir würden uns sehr freuen, wenn ihr dem Oshum Podcast und unserem News Podcast O-News dort folgt, wo ihr Podcasts am liebsten hört. Hört auf jeden Fall auch die aktuelle Folge O-News und beantwortet die Frage der Woche, powered by StockX. Alle Einsendungen haben am Ende des Monats die Chance auf einen Sneaker-Gutschein im Wert von fetten 250 Euro. Wenn ihr diese Folge Oshun übrigens in eurer Instagram-Story teilt und uns verlinkt, damit wir das auch sehen, seid ihr ebenfalls mit dabei. Schau doch auf Facebook, TikTok und Instagram.com/oshoonpodcast vorbei und interagiert mit uns und der Community. Checkt auf jeden Fall auch die Sneaker-Suchmaschine Sneakerjägers und werdet Teil der Sneakerjägers-Community. Supporten könnt ihr uns unter anderem mit einer positiven 5-Sterne-Bewertung bei Spotify und Apple Podcasts. Über 600 positive Bewertungen hat Oshun auf den Plattformen schon und eine Apple Podcast-Review würden wir hier gerne mit euch teilen. Megadance schrieb: Oshun Podcast, you make my day. Und das mit jeder neuen Ausgabe. Vielen Dank. Tut uns einen Gefallen und supportet die Podcasts und erzählt mindestens einem Freund oder einer Freundin, die sich für Sneaker und Streetwear interessiert, von uns. Show some love. Dankeschön. Wir hören uns in der nächsten Episode wieder. Bis dahin, beste Grüße aus Amsterdam. Macht's gut.